Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And another foul on board. His third for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo's dying for a moving screen.
It's that dreaded moving screen.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Moving Screen Podcast. I am Brendan Quinn of The Athletic, here with Dylan Burkhart, UM Hoops. Dylan, welcome to March.
It's March. I don't have a refrigerator, but the basketball is good.
The refrigerator, do you want to get into the refrigerator, or do you just want to leave that on the hanging for our listeners?
I just got the latest update. They're supposed to come on Saturday with the new piece to fix the fridge. Got a text today. They supposedly had an entire company-wide blackout, which apparently is a thing that happens, and they decided not to go to any of their appointments on Saturday. So the fridge wait continues. That's life here in the that's what we're working with. So
struggles. Oh my goodness.
You don't need
poor thing.
Just basketball is the answer. So we're just talking hoops, watching hoops. God. Let's do it.
I feel terrible for you, pal.
You don't sound like it.
Surviving, though. Well, it is March. Did you tweet about it? Did you inform all of your followers that it was March at midnight last night?
I did not. Did you?
No.
It's not my brand. Other people have that brand covered.
Yeah. I was, it being March, I was using the time to clean my my place because...
I thought you were going to say clean your refrigerator and I was going to leave the room.
Shit's about to get a little wild here, you know. It's when bullets start flying this time of year. You got to go into it with a nice, clean domicile, right? So, yeah,
it's good. Over
and
there.
Then I looked up; it was over. It was after midnight, and I said, "Oh man!" Poured a little glass of something, raised it to March.
That's nice.
A little of bourbon from Philadelphia, actually. What's the name of it here? Hold on, I'll give him a plug. It's not bad. It's a little orange-ish for my liking, but. Bloody Butcher Bourbon Whiskey from New Liberty Distillery in Philadelphia. Pretty good.
All right.
I recommend it.
All right. Okay. There we go. We got bourbon wrecks.
We got
complaining, but we have a lot of basketball to talk about.
There was something else I was supposed to give a recommendation to. Maybe my barber or something. I'll try to remember it and give a plug later. All right. Dylan, it is March. UM Hoops is loaded with content. I've been checking it out daily. It is outstanding stuff. The Athletic is loaded wall to wall, not only with my stuff, but we have college basketball coverage from all over the country. I have a bigger story dropping later this week that we will probably talk about on the pod later, but no teasers, no giveaways. I don't want to jinx anything, right?
Top secret.
When you have a big story going and it's in like a 5-person editing process, you don't want to start teasing it because then that inevitably means that someone's going to like put the kibosh on it or be like, we need a full rewrite or like, Quinn, this is shit. Take it back. Get
someone's
it back to us.
Slide in with the JV version of it somewhere else. You never know.
You never know. You
can't be so careful with your teasing.
Let's not jinx anything.
Big things coming.
When the story drops, then we'll talk about it. So subscribe to The Athletic, subscribe to UM Hoops. This is the best time of year. I am geared up. You get like an extra energy level at this time of year. I feel like you just feel better.
Yeah.
The snow is melting.
It's good. And you have like double beat trouble here where you've got the full on.
Yeah.
Like the number one seed race and the bubble race. It's, you got like the best of both worlds. You got it all covered. Like there's nothing else. Like those are the top storylines, I feel like, for this.
That's all you could ask for at this time of year, for sure. And some golf. I'll go have a little pit stop in Sawgrass next week. So, but we will still record the pod. It's all good. Dylan, we're going to start with Michigan State today. Everyone kind of knows Michigan is kind of steaming toward a Big Ten championship here, but Michigan State is probably the far more intriguing situation. Huge week last week, major props to the Spartans, wins over Illinois, Ohio State, breathed new life into the season. I think the question was whether it was, were they setting people up for disappointment, or was this classic Izzo figures it out, turns it around, kind of falls a little ass backwards into better lineups, which is, has happened before. And I think kind of happened again in this instance, but you know, to their credit, man, these guys, they had every reason to quit a lot of times. And last week was just tremendous turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about where, like a week ago on Saturday morning, whatever, they're in Bloomington, the first 10, 15 minutes, they're throwing the ball everywhere, look ragged as all hell. And then the next, 100 minutes of basketball have been the best they've played all year between mm-hmm. that second half was incredible. And then to go and beat Illinois, to beat Ohio State. I think we said on the pod last week, if you're on the bubble, the one thing you need is games. You need quality games that you can go and win. And they had a lot of chances, right? I mean, it was 2 weeks left in the regular season, but there was six games left on the schedule and they had an opportunity and they went out and made the most of it. And now you're in a situation where everything that maybe you didn't think you were playing for 3 weeks ago is all right there in front of you, right? Like there's a clear path for this team to get to the NCAA tournament in a way where it was sort of like, well, if this happens and this happens and all of a sudden we win a game we haven't won all year, they've gone out and beat two top 10 teams. Like mm-hmm. that's it. That's what you needed to happen. And now you're back kind of in control with a huge game coming up against Indiana at home.
Yeah. And not only winning those games, but like playing well, like they looked better. Suddenly shots are going in. The defense wasn't nearly as scattershot. Guys were playing with a degree of confidence. Aaron Henry takes on this kind of alpha role, whatever you want to call it, blah, blah, blah. But clearly, right, a playmaker, ball in his hands, put him out top, let him create. He's going off the bounce. He's attacking teams, finding his shots, getting to his spots. I know you have some Aaron Henry takes.
I just wanted to talk, like, so what do you make, like, his, so in February, he's averaging 18 points a game, 4 assists, and 4 rebounds, shooting 50% on twos, 39% on threes. Like, what, for me, like, I feel like we've seen this Aaron Henry in bits and flashes all year. So, because a lot of times you see a kind of late season breakout like this, and you're like, oh my God, he's doing all these things that we never saw. For me, he's doing exactly, I think, what we saw him do in his best moments. He's just kind of cut out the moments where you're just like, what are you doing? Why are you turning the ball over? Why are you kind of deferring? It's sort of just, okay, you're going to take 15 shots a game instead of 11 shots and 4 turnovers a game. And that's the big difference for me. Like I was just looking kind of through his,
he's doing the same thing. He's just doing it more.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly it. Like I was looking through a shot chart to see like, oh, how did he shoot before February and during February, right? It's the same shots, the same, he's making the shots. He's taking a few less threes, but it's still kind of all that in between, get to 8 feet and just flip it in. And he's insanely efficient making that shot. And mm-hmm. that really is kind of the bread and butter of his game, but he's just taking twice as many of them every night, basically. So it's really just a mentality thing for me where, okay, I'm the guy, I'm going to take every shot down the court when we go down the court instead of maybe it's my turn every 3 out of 5 possessions, right? Like for me, that's what really stands out about how his game has kind of shifted, because I look and I think like, these are the areas we said in November, in December, like Aaron Henry has to be the guy to carry this team to the finish line. And it was like, he didn't fully maybe accept the responsibility of the offense needs to run through me. And I don't know how exactly he got to that point, but he's definitely taken it up 50%.
Well, he's definitely on the ball more. I'm sure there's numbers that would spell this out, but it's fairly clear that, I mean, it is Michigan State's offense has turned from this kind of, you know, draw your names at point guard to gradually just becoming kind of give the ball to Aaron Henry.
But didn't we say that should have happened in
September?
I think you go back and look at old podcast episodes and it was Aaron Henry needs to be the point guard. Right. Everything else is window dressing, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, and to his credit, like he's making the shots too. Like he's making this a useful offense as opposed to just going up and just clanging elbow jumpers and missing floaters. Like he's putting the ball in the hoop. He's playing kind of with a fearless streak to him. There's really any level of passiveness or other things that people have maybe said here and there about him, but that's all out the window. I mean, he's the guy, and I think he recognizes it too, that like Josh Langford can't be taking 15 shots a game, and that, you know, if you want Henry to take 18 shots or have him take 10, what are those other eight shots going to be? They're not going to be as good as Aaron Henry taking them. So he might as well be the volume scorer shooter. It just took a while to get here. And there are games where you're like, well, shit, if it had been more of that, you know, this would be a bigger conversation or a different conversation. You know, they probably wouldn't have scored 55 points against Purdue.
Yeah, I just don't think there are very many people who can keep him from getting to that 8 to 10 foot little pull up and have the size and the length to really contest that shot and take it away. So at a certain point, you can try to do everything else and get other guys' shots, but he shoots 50%+ on that shot. He's going to make it. That's a point per possession. You're in a good spot if you can just go to that over and over. And I think that's what we've seen, especially late in games, that's finally something that Michigan State can kind of lean on. Whereas before, I'm not really sure what the identity was offensively in those spots, right? So it's kind of went between different options, and like there are games where Langford was taking late game shots. I just like, I don't think that's the winning recipe unless it's drive and kick. Like there's shots like earlier in the year, I feel like where clutch situations, you're giving the ball to Josh Langford to go get a shot. I don't think that's what you want. And Aaron Henry's going to get a better shot than Josh Langford in that spot every single time. But Langford now, all of a sudden he's making threes because he's getting better shots, right? Like it all kind of, everything falls into place when you have a guy to play through like Henry.
Yeah, I mean, far more efficient, far fewer shots. And that I mean, that was one of the big things in those two games was Langford was basically putting up the same amount of points on a half or two thirds of the amount of shots. And with Henry, like he's a weird thing to defend. You know, you just don't see guys like him. And it's a weird matchup for defenses to try to find the right guy to match his size and quickness. Cause if you know, okay, this guy can stay in front of Henry. Well, you know, Henry's still 6'6". Like he can score over you all day if you're 6'2". Or you're going to put a big guy on him where he's quick enough and he's proven to have the handle where he'll just go around you. So, you know, he puts you in a bind big time. It'll be interesting to watch these two Michigan games, obviously, because Michigan does have a few,
they do,
options that other Big Ten teams do not have. So with Henry, right now he looks like a second team all Big Ten player that everyone had kind of projected out, right?
Yeah, he's certainly playing like that at this point. I don't know if that makes you a second team all Big Ten player if you don't look like that for two thirds of the season, but that's where we are. I think we probably should talk about Gabe Brown. He's been kind of on this rocket ship into the rotation. Another thing, I mean, the podcast was on this shit early. We talked about this stuff early in the season, play Gabe Brown, and all of a sudden Gabe Brown's playing pretty damn well. Can we just, we did. I feel like we need a little credit for that. So
I'm all for taking the credit and giving it to you. You were on Gabe Brown. I've been on Gabe Brown for years and was feeling disheartened there for a while. I've always just felt that, you know, that size and his shooting, what the hell? But yeah, suddenly it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
You want a stat? Michigan State's better on offense and defense when Gabe Brown's on the court. I would never really, I feel like that goes against his reputation. +7 on offense when he's on the court, +6 on defense.
I mean, there's very few players on the Michigan State roster that you could say that about.
It's probably
Henry, Gabe, maybe Langford.
The problem, it's hard to, because Michigan State has a negative efficiency margin on the season, right? So it's hard to have a positive splits if you play all the damn time. But so, yeah, that I just thought that was interesting. I mean, I think he just gives you a completely different threat. And I like how Michigan State's going smaller. And, you know, I'm always for going smaller. Like,
sure.
I feel like that's all coming together in a way that's helpful. Not necessarily at Maryland, but where do you make of that small shift? And do you think that's kind of the way forward?
I think they need to be looking for Gabe more, get him more shots at this point. There were times in that game, like, guys need to be looking for him. I think head up, looking for him to have his feet set. You got to pass him the ball. There was a time in yesterday's game in the second half where Michigan State was trying to make that comeback. Gabe was just standing in the corner. Malik Hall missed him. Aaron Henry missed him. And, like, those are shots you got to have. I have no problem with him. You know, there were back Ohio State and Illinois. He only took 2 threes each in those games. And yes, they won. And yes, they played their best games of the year. But, like, give me 4, 5, 6 Gabe Brown threes a game at this point, because he's feeling good. There's no reason not to cash in on that. And the more he's shooting, the more engaged he is, too.
Mm-hmm. If you're shooting 46% from three, you're not shooting enough threes, right? Like, you need to shoot until you're shooting 40% at the bare minimum, because that is just a sign that you don't shoot. You're a good shooter and you don't shoot enough. And I mean, he's what, 39% career. He needs as many shots, especially because it's not like there's someone you're worried about taking shots away from. So if he's on the court, you need to get him as many catch and shoot looks as you can. Obviously, that's easier said than done. I thought it was interesting. Maryland's defensive game plan was really to pack it in against Michigan State and really to kind of just sag into the gaps and dare Michigan State to beat it with threes, which you think about a lot this season. We've talked about how Michigan State's offense stalled because it kind of couldn't get to the rim and it settled for a bunch of like mid-range in between shots. And we like talked about all the other twos and whatever else, but the Maryland game, Maryland was like, okay, I dare you to beat us with the three. And I thought that was an interesting shift. I feel like that's not how teams have defended Michigan State generally this year. So what did you make of that shift? And is that like the way to defend Michigan State now, or is it just a product of how Maryland plays? I couldn't really parse that out.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is Maryland, like what Maryland is and what they are with their size and all of this. And I'm sure some of that probably had to do with rebounding too. And this idea that, like, look, Michigan State is not going to really beat teams off the bounce, and it has no interior presence at all, really. So I agree with you. Like, that's probably why you don't see teams just give up threes. There's really no reason to, you know. But, you know, Maryland's ability to match up all over the court, and there's guys switching, and they have kind of similar size at all places. It's like five of the same guys, you know, is on the court, basically.
Yeah, and maybe that's just how Maryland's been. I haven't watched that many Maryland games lately because
I think it's more of that.
Going through the ringer against Nebraska and the like. But credit to Mark Turgeon for turning that around. But I think that is interesting because, like, what you'd say is, like, the Michigan-Maryland games, the big differentiator was, oh, okay, we'll just throw it into Hunter Dickinson, and you have a bunch of like-sized guys who can guard point guards really well but can't guard seven-footers. And Michigan State doesn't have that option, right? So – that maybe that's why Maryland's strategy was more effective in that situation. But I guess that's probably the concern, is you saw some of that. Okay, well, we need to get a bucket. Aaron Henry was just 4-12 on twos. That's not going to really care. You need him to basically make half of his twos to have a good offensive game, I would say, to open things up. And that's a lot of pressure on him. And I feel like that's kind of why we've been back and forth. Like, at his best, he looks incredible, right? So I don't know.
And I thought part of the three-point shooting, like, as much as it was Maryland wanting Michigan State to take those shots, I think a lot of it also was a matter of that's all that was available, because they couldn't beat anyone off the dribble. They couldn't, you know, they were not able to get inside of 18 feet. It just wasn't happening. So, you know, that there was a lot of questionable shot selections. There was a lot of bad shot selections early in shot clocks and key spots, especially in the second half. There were moments where there was no other option. So
yeah, in the first half, especially, I feel like there were a lot of like full shot clock possessions where you're just ending up with a three because you couldn't get anything better.
Exactly. Well, exactly. So it's not like Maryland was just not guarding the line.
No.
And just saying shoot away, right? We're confident you're going to miss and we'll just grab boards and go the other way. There just wasn't much else going.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. I got one Michigan State stat here that I want to know. So would you agree? Like, I feel like Michigan State has really doubled down on kind of just using their fouls inside. They're last in the Big Ten in free throw rate, allowing 40.1 free throws per 100 attempts. I have a stat here. They have 11 games this season with a free throw rate over 40% out of, 23. And then 8 of those 11 games have happened in February. Or since January 31st. So it's definitely been a war drill situation here, I think, where like Michigan State is just doubling down on. I mean, early in the year, it was just we're just standing there in the post and they're just throwing the ball in the post and scoring on it. Now it's you're going to throw the ball in the post and we're going to follow you every possession and hope that half of them get called. Would you agree with that assessment? And I feel like that's kind of where this team is. Reclaimed its identity. I mean, that the Illinois and Ohio State game were two of the most physical games I've probably seen all year. Sure. So I think that gives this team an edge.
Like if you had broken down like those early post touches, anytime anyone was near the basket against Michigan State, they were probably at like a 1.3 point per possession.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was probably outrageous, right? So now if you're tackling guys, well, look, like you said, they're either not going to call it or worst case scenario, they go to the foul line. Maybe they make two. Maybe they go 1 for 2. You're still coming out on a net positive. Makes sense. You've got all these bodies.
Yeah, I just feel like that's been a very noticeable shift.
That's a good point.
And early in the year, it was all about, man, Michigan State's interior defense looks awful. Like if you were to go back like that late December games, it was just like a disaster, right? And now it's sort of – just mucking it up into a stalemate almost where it's just going to be a bludgeoning in there. And that's where this, I think that's given this team a little life. And I think that's kind of in the deep seated identity of what the program wants to be. Right. And that setting the tone in that way. And I think Illinois and Ohio State had problems matching that. And that was a big part of those games. Right. Cause I mean, Illinois is usually the team that's delivering the blow. And instead it was just like, man, these guys are bringing it against us in a way that we didn't really expect. So I think that's interesting and something to watch, especially this last week,
right?
The season.
Before we get into NCAA tournament picture for Michigan State, Indiana tomorrow, interestingly still projected as a loss on KenPom, has it at 69-68, which is interesting. I'm assuming that's just a numbers thing.
I mean, they're what, 25 spots ahead of them in KenPom?
Are they that much? Is the gap?
It's 37 versus 62 in KenPom. So it's very much a recent. Like I'm sure if you pulled up the Bart Torvik over the last 2 weeks, it'd be like Michigan State's 25th and Indiana's 150th. So it's one of those recency things for sure. We both watched that Indiana Michigan game. It's hard to really get excited about anything Indiana's doing.
Man, I mean, just broken in every way. I mean, they just look like a broken team. And who knows what can happen between then and now, you know, either some amazing speech. I don't know what old Arch has for them, but man, that group looks broken. You know, they're playing for their NCAA tournament lives just as much as Michigan State is, though. And you know, they have an opportunity right in front of them, same as Michigan State does, right? They're just two teams with very different vibes at this minute is all. But, you know, if Indiana goes and beats Michigan State, beats Purdue, they're in the tournament, no doubt.
Yeah. The loser of this game is in a really, really bad spot.
It's pretty much an elimination game. Yeah.
It's always too early to say it's an elimination game, but it's a really bad spot. I mean, like Michigan State could go and sweep Michigan, all of a sudden they're in, right? So it's not an elimination game, but
you're right in terms of, but in reality, the loser of this team is like Michigan State's not going to sweep Michigan. I'm going to tell you that right now.
I'm just saying there's games to be played. It's not an elimination game until there's no more games, right?
That is fair and very diplomatic, yes.
Like a Thursday game in the Big Ten tournament, that can be an elimination game.
Sure.
When you have multiple regular season games left, it's not an elimination game. You're probably trying to make the Purdue game an elimination game for all we know. So I'm just saying you got to slow down on the elimination. And then
loser's kind of fucked, though.
Luka's not in a great spot. I'll give you that. I have a hard time coming away with the reason to think Indiana has a big chance in this game. I mean, Indiana gets to the free throw line all the time. Michigan State fouls all the time. That's the recipe for Indiana. But at the same time, I think Armon Franklin being out, and I think he's still expected to be out from what it sounds like. It seems like it could be the whole regular season. That's a huge loss for Indiana. And he's one of the basically two multi-dimensional perimeter players who can make jump shots on the team, and you kind of need that. So I think that really takes some of the blow out of what Indiana can do on an already pretty average offense. So basically they're just going to – I mean, like, but still, Trace Jackson Davis good enough to take over a game? You never know. I wouldn't be coming anywhere close to picking Indiana in that spot.
No, I mean, I would like to think, you know, this was the second half of that game was kind of when Michigan State started forming a different identity and playing smaller lineup, right? Like this is all coming into this, the Michigan State coming into this game is completely different than the Michigan State team that went into the last Indiana game when it fell down, whatever it was, 19-6 or something like that. A very different scenario here. So, considering what happened at Maryland, right, falling down 11-0, and that just kind of basically dive bombing that game for them, like they just never overcame that. I would look for Michigan State to be emphasizing a very strong start to this game. And from there, you know, I think it's a better matchup for Michigan State, the way they're playing right now, at least, and maybe they – you know, they're going into this game knowing what Thomas Kithier did against Trace Jackson Davis in the last matchup, and that's probably their best defensive matchup. But yeah, I mean, really all Indiana had in that game was Jackson Davis. He took 16 free throw attempts and 18 field goal attempts.
Yeah, but all Indiana has is Trace Jackson Davis. It's not that game. I just don't know who's going to beat you if it's not him. I mean, right. It's just... that season is going nowhere quick, in my opinion. So I think it's a good spot for Michigan State. I think it sets up really the situation at the end of the year. And you're just beefing in my Twitter mentions with everyone on the internet about what Michigan State needs to do to make the NCAA tournament. So will you break it down for me with your numbers here? I saw you wrote a whole story about it.
But
you're trying numbers. To eliminate
were you,
people.
Were you happy with the numbers?
Yeah. It was good. I'm just break it down for the people. They want to know, and you're over here causing a stir.
Part of it's opinion, but like anything else, but based on my thoughts and based on even numbers in Bartorvik's team cast, which is kind of is able to insert potential outcomes for the close of the season, and it basically spits out a score, for lack of a better term, a percentage chance of what your likelihood would be of making the tournament field, right? Basically, if Michigan State wants to feel safe going to bed the Saturday before Selection Sunday, I think it either needs to beat Indiana and win two games in the Big Ten tournament, okay, or beat Indiana, split with Michigan, and win one game in the Big Ten. Actually, you know what? I don't even think if they beat Michigan, I don't think it matters. They could be one and done in Indy. I think they're still in if you beat Michigan. So, you know, there's this question of that. I was going back and forth with the MSU guys on the beat of if they get swept by Michigan and win one game in Indy, is that enough? It very well could be. Look, like if that team that they play in the first round in Indy is Wisconsin and they beat Wisconsin or Purdue, very well could be enough to get them in, right? But what if that game is Maryland? What if that game's even Rutgers? You know, games that just might not give you the boost that you need. And now you're firmly on the bubble. Like, I'm just saying, if you want to feel comfortable on Selection Sunday, the two scenarios that I laid out are how you get there. And if you do something different, you could still get in, but you could, I think you're razor thin line in that scenario. What say you?
So it's Indiana, Michigan, and then it's the, seems like now because Richard Pitino took the end of the year off, it's going to be Michigan State's really looking at that 8-9 game. So you're looking at Michigan again in the second round of the Big Ten tournament.
Right.
I think if Michigan State wins two games, like the 8-9 game, and beats Indiana, it would be in as the bubble stands right now. The problem is the bubble is going to basically shrink over time. It always does, right? Like, you can say, okay, compared to all these teams, based on what's happened, you'd be in the first four, whatever, if you win those games.
You saying that on March 1st is a lot easier, right?
Yeah, and it's a lot easier because you're not projecting what every other team is doing. You're saying, okay, well, based on how all these other teams look right now, Michigan State with those two wins would be in. And I think they would have a chance to get in even through the whatever happens. But you'd be sweating out every damn conference tournament game at 12 a.m. and just like are bid thieves and multi-bid leagues and, oh, this team won a couple games. And so I think that you start to worry a little bit. If you go and beat Michigan once, I don't care if it's – you got three tries. Win one of those games, I think you're
in.
You probably could be up past the first four for all we know, right? Like, so I – that just seems like really – and if you play a team three times in a week, like, it's one thing to have to beat a top 10 team. If you get three tries, it's not a terrible situation in a game, right? Like, eventually – I don't know. I feel like if that's just the one game you need to win, it's not a terrible setup how the games are scheduled right now. So that's all the opportunities right there. That's kind of how I put it. Like, in right now, based if they win two, but the situation will change. And you're with those losses to Michigan, you wouldn't really have the situation to improve your stock beyond kind of that baseline where you'd be, and you'd be worried about what could go down.
But like, so you bring up the 8-9 game, right? Like, there's a scenario where correct me if I'm wrong. There's a scenario where Indiana could lose to Michigan State tomorrow, lose to Purdue, and be in that game still, right?
I haven't looked at all the brackets, but I assume
it's not impossible for them to not play an NCAA tournament team in that game. Is that correct?
I mean, I assume that would mean Indiana would win another game this season, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Neither
Indiana's not going to beat Purdue in Archie Miller's last game. Like, come on, let's be serious.
That's not happening.
Right? Like, he's never beat Purdue. It's going to happen in this stage when Purdue's playing to try to get to the four seed. I think Purdue will cruise in that game. So I don't think Indiana's going to get to that game. I feel like the it'd be Wisconsin, it'd be Rutgers maybe. I don't know.
It's probably Rutgers. Or
Rutgers or Wisconsin, I would say.
Maryland? I mean, Maryland's 9-9. Rutgers is 9-9. But, like, I think you're just playing a slightly better bubble team in that game. And
that's a good win. Said, I mean,
it's a good win. But I'm just saying, if there's other, like you said, you know, bids get stolen here and there, suddenly it gets tight. Like, does a win over Maryland make you a lock to get in? I don't know.
I mean, you know that Friday noon Michigan State game would be like pitched as win and they're in, right? Like, that's how it would be phrased. And like, kind of reminds me of what Michigan, the year they made the first four, how they had to win the 8-9 game and they had to beat Indiana. It's a little similar in that sense, but
it is Cam Chapman in the corner, and then they lost to Purdue the next day, right?
Yeah. And then I just remembered. Like, just be glad that if Michigan State makes the first four, you don't have to fly your ass all over the damn place. That was terrible. God.
Remember that? I needed my wisdom teeth out. Do you remember that debacle?
I don't remember much from that week, but I remember
not great.
Early flights and just
landing in Brooklyn at like 10 a.m. on St. Patrick's Day on no sleep. Went to some bar for a pint.
Living the dream. But the thing is, the teams that Michigan State would play in that 8-9 game, even if you think they're just average bubble teams, they're going to be that's going to be a Q1 game, right? Even if it's Rutgers, even if it's Maryland, because all those teams have they're the teams that are going to suffer from playing Michigan State because Michigan State's net is so far down, right? So it's a plus spot for Michigan State regardless. Other leagues don't have Q1 games and the 8-9 game, I'll tell you that much. So that's a bonus for Michigan State.
Well, what any chance Minnesota finishes win-win over Penn State and Rutgers?
I mean, they just lost to Nebraska and Northwestern. So I'm going to go with no.
So look, like they very well could go beat Indiana, lose two games to Michigan, win in the first round over Maryland, lose the next day to Michigan, and be in the first four. Certainly plausible. Would anyone feel good leaving Indy, or not leaving Indy because they're just going back to their hotel? Would anyone feel great, though, exiting the arena that day? I don't think so. I don't think you feel.
It wouldn't be like, man, we did it. We punched our ticket. It'd be like, oh, baby, we got a long wait. Let's make some phone calls. Let's get some CBS spots dialed up here and let's.
Yeah, Mr. March, all that bullshit. It ain't that. I don't think anyone's feeling that way. But win two games. Or beat Michigan, or basically
beat Michigan,
beat Michigan once and you're in, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say. You feel a lot better for a multitude of reasons, right?
Yes.
Beating Michigan will make everyone feel better regardless. So,
yeah, no doubt.
So the motivation will be there.
Any other bubble thoughts?
No, I don't know how I got involved in all those conversations on Twitter last night, but it was stressful.
Because you chimed in, big boy.
I really don't think
you
I
said,
did.
You said, can I mute?
Well, I was already
Twitter
on it.
Bubble talk, and that tagged you into it.
No, I was already in it. That's why I asked to mute it.
I didn't put you in it. I would never drag you into that.
It stressed me out. Should we move away from the bubble and flip over to Michigan here?
Yeah, of course. Okay. So... very much the opposite. Now probably up to a number two overall seed, maybe some would say. Michigan?
I think Michigan's in.
I think Michigan's in the tournament.
I think so. I mean, Michigan's getting close to locking in a number one seed, I would say, with a couple more wins, right?
Yeah.
I can't even figure out who the fourth best team in the country is at this point. So there seems to be a pretty big gap between the top three.
I agree. Very much so. I wonder if Michigan wins out, wins a Big Ten championship, I think they have to give them the number one overall seed.
Correct. I mean, if they win, what would it be, six more games or whatever?
Yeah.
I would think – I think they would have so many quality wins in that situation that would put them ahead of Gonzaga, even if Gonzaga was undefeated.
And their one loss came without a starter. You know, people forget that.
It did. And I feel like Michigan just – beat the crap out of Iowa, went on the road and beat the crap out of Indiana, and they both felt sort of just like average performances, right? Like it wasn't like Michigan played above their
weight. I mean, I thought the Iowa game was a little bit better. Like the Indiana game, that was very much a kind of just go through, get the job done, get the hell out of there intact.
And a 16-point road win, right? Like
right.
That kind of speaks to, I think, where this team is at, that early in the year, that I don't think we were looking at it like that. Like, I think they've really progressed to get to that point where obviously Indiana's not great and whatever else. Michigan just has destroyed Indiana under Archie Miller, but it was just a really routine double-digit win and kind of just this is what Michigan is. And now it's just all games matter from here on out, right? There's no more routine games. It's either a rivalry game, it's a game that's going to determine a Big Ten championship, it's going to be an elimination game. Like, Michigan set itself up for everything that's going to happen over the next month, but the next month is going to kind of write the end of the story, right? You have to finish the job now.
Yeah, starting with Illinois, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I feel like, a game where it's one of those final cement, you know, what this team is, like on a like level of one of the better Big Ten teams that people will remember for a long time, potentially here, you know, like you go and finish this thing out with one loss. I mean, they're up there for sure. So I mean, it's one of those things. They've played so well so long. They've built to this thing, right? And now it's go and you. I think you want to finish out a Big Ten championship, right? Without any questions of you played this many games, you did that, right? You just go and hammer everyone on the way out the door and say, you know, yeah.
The only reason Michigan's
putting that banner up and you're not going to question it
is because they didn't play Illinois 3 weeks ago. You realize that, right? I mean, if Michigan wasn't picking and choosing who they played and where, they'd probably be 500. But I do think that this Illinois game would really help cement that, right? Because I think if you go and lose to Illinois home, all of a sudden people are going to say, well, this, but that, and the rest. So it's the chance you want. I think everyone will want to see this game. I don't know what's going on with
any word on Io
Umu's face, but I don't know.
Unless like a doctor ties him to a chair, I'd be stunned if he doesn't play in this game, right? He's such a gamer.
There were rumors out there that he was out till the Big Ten tournament, though.
Wow.
I don't know.
That would really suck. That would really suck.
And let's be serious. I mean, even if Michigan loses this game, Michigan's going to win the Big Ten on winning percentage, right? So,
right. And for Indiana and for Illinois' bigger picture, this game
they need to win anything. The tournament. They want to make a run in the NCAA
right.
Tournament.
They're trying to go to the Final Four. They're not worried. You know, that's way more important than beating Michigan. And the key to going to the Final Four is a healthy as humanly possible, well rested Io DeSumo.
Yeah. So I don't know that you would say, like, if there's a chance he breaks his face worse, I don't think you're gonna shove him out there. So I think they'll probably be. I think you're at the point in this season where you're just gonna be cautious if you're Illinois and say, okay, well, kind of round into form in the Big Ten tournament and then make a run in March. So I don't know.
That said, though, I mean, you agree with me. Io is a gamer. Like, that is a tough son of a bitch who, if they give him the option, like, he will be putting on his uniform before the competition's over. You know what I mean? Like, and go out there trying to win this game. Because this is like, I don't know, like, bragging rights isn't the right way. But, like, this game does mean, like, it's a big game. People care about this game.
This is the game that will determine the, like, if Michigan wins, it clinches the Big Ten regular season on winning percentage. It's the two best teams in the Big Ten. It's the game everyone wants to see. It's definitely, I'd say, the biggest regular season game of the Big Ten. Almost. It's got to be up there, right?
I think
so. It's all that and the rest. I don't know that Illinois would gamble for it based on the situation. So we'll see.
So one thing we have to bring up, right? Illinois fans complaining about the schedule and the way this stuff's worked out. Like, I get it. You know, like, I might not agree with it, but, like, I get where they're coming from, right? Like, if you're trying to win a Big Ten championship, it sucks that one team is only playing 17 games, right? And you can say whatever reason. Like, I think people listening to this are fairly confident in, you know, what Michigan was doing and the situation that it was in through very, in a lot of ways, no fault of its own. You can complain. Sure. Why not? And I can understand why Brad Underwood would be pissed too. Okay. But why Brad Underwood would decide after the last game to make the comment that he did about, should I pull up the exact quote?
Yeah, we got it. Let's pull this up.
Just
it was, we're going to honor the postponed games because we're a member of this league. We're not going to be the teams that pick and choose what we play for whatever. We're going to show up. I think it's about character, and this team has a ton of it. That's so, what we're talking about.
So I interpret that as some pretty clear shade thrown in Michigan's direction. And again, behind closed doors, if Brad Underwood wants to be pissed about how this has gone, totally fine. I would too if I were a coach. But saying it publicly, I just don't think you needed. I think that was just a bad call. Just giving Michigan a reason, right? It was just unnecessary. I think it was just a misplay by him.
Yeah, I was shocked to see that he said that. Publicly, just even beyond, like, I just don't see, well, are you earning yourself any favors in the league when you mm-hmm. do that, right? Like, I don't know. There's a way to handle it. And I don't know if that's exactly it. Is it going to be motivated? I don't really buy into, oh, well, Michigan's going to be really ready to play because Brad Underwood said this, that, and the rest. But, I mean, Juwan Howard is into that kind of thing. So I'm sure they'll hear about the quote, given what that's Juwan Howard was saying about the gold jerseys and everything else in the Ohio State game.
If it were beeline, right, it'd be like, well, I could give a shit. We're not even going to bring it up in meetings, whatever. Like, this is 1,000% going to be referenced in Michigan meetings this week. I can guarantee you, without a doubt.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, Illinois seems to have a lot of animosity for Michigan. They already won the game in Ann Arbor last year, which was like a big moment in Michigan season. Like, people are going to be ready for this game regardless. I was shocked that he went off that. And the situation is, like, Michigan wins a couple more games, it's going to have clinched the Big Ten by any measure, right? Like, there's a chance that Michigan wins enough games that it won't even if they would have lost to Northwestern and Penn State, that they would still win the Big Ten. Like, that's a very in-play scenario in a way that all this whining would be a little pointless, right?
Yeah. But I just, like, for an old coach, like, Underwood's not some young dude to just be just spitting something like that. That just made no sense to me.
I assume he thinks he's motivating his team.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, I just wouldn't say it out loud. That's all. Or at least outside of closed doors. So what do you think about this? Let's scenario A with Io, scenario B without Io. You know, in the matchup we want to see with him, how do you think that kind of breaks out and what's the best defensive matchup on him?
Yeah, so I guess big picture first on Illinois. Like, all the efficiency numbers in the Big Ten say they're the second best team by a lot. I also feel like they haven't really clicked. Like, it seems like they're better, or their pieces are better than all the parts to get, like, the sum of the whole parts, right? Mm-hmm. Really botch that one, but no, so it feels like they're a team I like to make a run in the NCAA tournament because I feel like they have that talent. I also feel like they haven't played up to the level it seems like they should be capable of playing at any consistent point this season. This new injury doesn't help. Dosunmu, I think it starts in transition. They're one of the best transition teams in the country. Michigan has a really good transition defense, so that's kind of a strength-on-strength matchup. I tend to think you go with – I don't know what the defensive matchup is. I think, like, where Michigan gets an advantage in this entire matchup is the size on the wing. So Dosunmu's big, but you're playing with Adam Miller, Curbelo, DeMonte. All these guys are, like, 6'3 and shorter, right? Trent Frazier is, like, 6 foot. So Michigan's length on the wings really – changes the equation as far as just, like, sheer size and what that does on both ends of the court with Franz and with Isaiah. And Illinois doesn't have a matchup for that, really. Like, Jacob Grandison has played a little bit. He's not going to equal Isaiah Livers, right? So that's where you try to create an advantage if you're Michigan. I lean Eli on Dosunmu because I think that he's better defending kind of at the point of attack and on the ball. But I think you'll see a lot of Franz Wagner too. I think it's nice that you have a place to kind of stash Mike Smith. You can just put him on Trent Frazier and say, don't let him shoot. That's an easy matchup for Michigan. And then I just don't know who guards Franz Wagner. I don't know who guards Isaiah Livers. And then it just comes down to the big boys in the post and how that plays out. Cause they're the two biggest bullies in the Big Ten. They basically change games with how strong they are at the rim. And that is going to, I mean, Hunter Dickinson's been ridiculously good on defense over the last week. What he did against Trace and Garza was not really supposed to happen. Like, I don't know where that, like, he's been good defensively. He's turning into great defensively.
And absolutely,
that will be a really fascinating part to watch. And then Austin Davis in the game, you tell him you better follow the hell out of Kofi Coburn whenever he's near the basket and don't let him get a shot on the rim because he cannot make free throws.
Right.
That's the game plan for me.
No, I agree with a lot of it. I'd be more inclined to start Franz on Io and see if you can make him, like, I think he can play his game against Eli. I think you have a chance to make him uncomfortable with Franz and try it, right? So I would go a combination of Franz and Shaundy Brown.
Yeah, Shaundy will for sure see time on him.
But I agree with you otherwise. The mix and match matchups are really interesting here. And I think we need to get Rick Boyegis on the line and get him to talk to whoever the staff is or the crew is for this game. It's no early fouls on Kofi, no early fouls on Dickinson. People have been waiting all year to watch this game. If they call any fouls in the first 6 minutes, you're not working the Big Ten tournament. You're out.
Wow. I'm glad. Let's be glad you're not running the league. You're going to have all sorts of shady shit going on. I
like, unless there's blood drawn, no fouls on either center.
Kofi Coburn draws 7.3 fouls per 40 minutes. It's the sixth most in the country. He shoots 57% at the line.
Exactly.
So tricky spot. And he shoots 67% from two. Dunk, dunk, dunk. Dude's a monster. I don't know. For Michigan, I think the key is to kind of – I don't think the answer is to just go throw the ball into Hunter Dickinson every possession and see if he can get Kofi. I feel like Michigan's kind of fallen into this trap in the first half of games where we're going to really force the ball into Hunter and try to get foul trouble on Luka or whatever. That'll come, but I think when Michigan just runs its stuff and plays kind of a more flowing offense, the offense just – doesn't bog down as much trying to force the ball in the post and just get to that naturally, get to that on some rolls. And then in the second half, you have a point where you kind of close that door.
I totally agree with you. I think what you said about how does Illinois match up on Franz and Isaiah, that's the bit, like that's where I think your sweet spot is for getting your offense is if Franz has someone who's 6'3 on him, you drive all day. If Livers has someone who's 6'2 on him, you know, he can back him down or try to use his size on them. And then, you know, if they're doubling on Dickinson, you can get him into rotations and stuff like that. That's I wouldn't think so. Right. Doesn't make any sense, but going to Dickinson just straight up doesn't make any sense starting out. I don't think.
No. And it's one of those things where we used to complain about how Austin Davis started. But there's a weird thing where Hunter could just destroy Georgie, but somehow it's going to be Austin Davis on Georgie, which is actually a plus matchup for Georgie, right. I would say. And you'd almost rather figure out a way that if you can stagger, you can get Hunter some minutes against Georgie and get Austin some minutes against Kofi. I think that almost actually helps if there's a way to figure that out. And that's a little like 3D chess almost where you're like, well, how do we figure that out? But I wonder if you can do that by maybe going to Austin early in the first half, like get him his shift right away. That's something to watch out for because I think Georgie actually would kind of be a tough cover for Austin in a way. Whereas, I mean, at least you know Kofi's not going anywhere too quick. So I'll watch out for that a little bit.
Right. And like among Big Ten centers, like, look, I mean, at least Austin physically can wrestle with him as opposed to just being dunked like some guys, right?
Austin's had a good stretch of games here.
He has. And he, you know, he will use his body. He will not just get backed into the baseline and dunked on time after time again. And he's got five fouls. And
he needs to
foul. I agree with you. I like that idea a lot about just trying to figure out a substitutional situation where you can steal minutes with Dickinson and Georgie straight up. I think that's a great call.
Because Georgie has no chance to guard Hunter.
None.
Austin has,
if anything, you'll get in foul trouble.
Yeah, Austin has a bad habit of kind of throwing out soft fouls. I feel like you need to make sure you don't let Kofi finish through a foul. I feel like he's had that happen a couple times recently. The matchup, like Illinois is going to try to put Damonte Williams on Franz Wagner. I would say like Damonte is kind of their defensive guy. Aaron Henry killed Damonte Williams. I haven't really seen like. It's one of those things where you have this guy who's known as a defensive stopper for 4 years. And then by the time he's a senior, it's sort of like, is he actually stopping anyone or am I missing it?
And he's 6'3".
Yeah.
Like Aaron Henry's 6'6". Franz Wagner's 6'10". Right. Like that's not a good matchup.
Illinois doesn't have someone 6'6", 6'7", to guard a Franz Wagner and really an Isaiah Livers. Right. So they're going to try to figure that out. But I don't know what the answer is there. Do you,
No, I have no idea. I think that's certainly Michigan's best advantage in this game. I think Illinois in this, you know, they're what, 38% on threes this year. What are they in conference? 36%. Like, they got to make threes in this game, somehow, some way. And if they're without Io, then they really, like, that's when you need just unbelievable, I think, unbelievable shooting nights from, you know, Miller, from Damonte Williams. Maybe he takes more than one or two threes in a game, even though he's a 55% 3-point shooter, whatever.
I think
a Trent Frazier hits like five or six threes, that kind of night is what I think they would need.
I think if Dosunmu misses the game, Illinois' only chance is just to really muck. Like, it comes down to, can you stop Michigan? Because Illinois only scored more than 1.1 points per possession once since January 17th. So they're like getting like if you get to like 1.04 points per possession, that's like an okay offensive game, good enough to win. And that they're like getting to that point every night. Michigan's getting up in the 1.15, 1.2. Like, Michigan's offense has been just cooking over the last month. So if Illinois can't stop them, I have a really hard time seeing Illinois keep up in a game like that offensively, because the other problem is you can't run off of makes, right? So if you're giving up buckets all the time, also that's the best transition defense there is. So Illinois basically blew out Minnesota with a great offensive game. But other than that, their offense has been like really kind of grinding these games out. And that's only going to be emphasized if Dosunmu misses the game. And basically you're going to try to play slower, pound the ball into Kofi, and then see what happens. So I don't know how much offensive upside there really is for this team without Dosunmu in the game. And that's fair. He's a player of the year type of guy, right? Like, it's not like you're missing a third option and your offense breaks. He's the best player in the league, I would say.
Right. And this is a situation that I think a lot of teams find themselves in Michigan. Illinois is a really good defensive team. That's a really bad matchup for Michigan. Or a really bad matchup against Michigan. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
by all measures, Illinois can play defense. But then you line up these rosters and you start saying who's on who, and you're like, oh, I don't know how this works out. You know?
Yeah, it's tough. Where do you start? You like, Michigan has flowed so naturally. Like, it's like there's just a week, it's someone different, right? It was Isaiah Livers before the shutdown. It's been Franz Wagner lately. Hunter Dickinson's finding a way to just kind of be there when Michigan needs him. Mike Smith, you heard about him. He's playing out of his mind at times. And then right. It's just, I don't know what you do. You can take one or two things away, but what you can't take everything away from Michigan. So you have to hope that you take two things away, and then whoever you don't take away has a bad night.
I was on Channel 7 last night doing hit, right? Little news hit. That's my big flex. I was on the local news last night. You like that? I was asked, you know, Isaiah Livers isn't getting a lot of player of the year chatter among everyone else, but like, you know, can you make a case for him, you know, being one of the most important players? I was like, I could make a case for him not even being I can make a case for Franz Wagner being more important than him. You can make a case for Hunter Dickinson being more important than him. That's the beauty of Michigan. That's why they're so damn good, is that they have all of this. And then you look at the supplemental pieces, and we could have an entire podcast right now on just Mike Smith. We can have an entire podcast right now on Eli Brooks and Sean D. Brown.
Yeah. What, can we talk about all Big Ten teams for a sec?
Sure.
We'll change it up a little. Do you think, will Michigan have a first team all Big Ten player?
I think Michigan should have two first team all Big Ten players.
Who would you vote for? Like, what, Bronze two? Like,
and Hunter Dickinson.
Okay, yeah. So I feel like Michigan's more likely to have three second team players than
they could, because right? How ballots eliminate each other. Yeah, for sure, it could happen.
You could make a case. Like, it's just the balance of it all is really pretty incredible, and I feel like that's what makes Michigan so good. But it kind of takes away from some of these accolades and whatever else. And I guess that buys into what Juwan preaches a lot with sacrifice and whatever else. But It's just crazy to me.
You could make a case if they finish 16-1, you could make a case that those three guys who would be on the second team could all be on the first team.
And they all might be on the second team. That's what I'm saying.
Right,
like,
right.
It's crazy that if Michigan finishes 3-4 games, I don't even know how you calculate it with mismatched numbers, but ahead of the league and not have a first team all Big Ten player. But if you did a draft, like if you were going to make a Big Ten team, Franz Wagner is my first pick.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't even think there's much question about it. And I, like Travion Williams, I wouldn't build a team around. Like, he's really good, but I just like, he is what he is, and your team has to be what he is. Whereas Michigan's pieces are so multidimensional that they can fit really nicely, and that kind of brings everything together. I mean, it's just crazy to think about at this point in the season and how they've gotten to this point.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I feel bad leaving Livers off the first team on my ballot, but that's going to be what probably ends up happening. It'll be Franz, Dickinson, Garza, Io, and Travion. What about you?
Yeah, I guess that's
It's hard leaving Trace Jackson Davis off, but like,
no, it's not.
But
they're
yeah,
too bad.
They're too bad. Exactly. It's hard. I mean, EJ Liddell and
Travion
Liddell for me, out. Like
Liddell me, deserves to be too. A first team Big Ten player because he's way.
I think Liddell has more around him at Ohio State than Travion does at Purdue. No,
and Ohio State's better than Purdue. Yeah, I guess they got swept by Purdue.
In the standings, they're pretty much neck and neck.
Yeah, all right, but I could see Liddell and Travion making it over Michigan guys, just because they're going to get all the votes for that team, right? They're clearly the most important players on their team, and Michigan just. If you watch Michigan in January, you would be picking Hunter. If you watch Michigan in late January, you'd be picking Isaiah. If you watch Michigan now, you'd be picking Franz. It's just a crazy kind of wave through, and it'll be interesting how that plays out coming down the stretch.
Agree. Cheap plug for a story I wrote. Mike Smith. I thought it was a kind of mystery. I was able to get him on the phone after the game at Indiana, and we were – talking about, you know, him with all the attention that those other guys, right, just kind of builds on what we're talking about with those three just being, you know, the focal points of defenses. It has to be, even though they know that you're kind of picking your poison. But, you know, those other guys just finding their spots. And with the amount of time that, you know, Mike has the ball in his hands and trying to find when maybe he wants to score. It's been a really interesting process for him, kind of working it out mentally, because there's probably been times where maybe he's even been a little bit too unselfish because he's just moving the ball and he's got all this talent around him. He's described it as being like a kid in a candy store and all of that. But there were times against Iowa where they were going under screens and he was just still running the offense and then just kind of questioning himself, being like, why am I not shooting? He's shooting 46% on threes. Right? Like a Mike Smith three is a good shot in this offense. So I just, he was kind of walking me through it and it was just very much, you know I can score. People kind of forget I'm a scorer, but I know that me running the offense is what's best for the team. And that's what makes us go and all of this. And I just kind of wondered your thoughts on that. Both Mike as distributor, Mike as kind of pick his spot scorer.
Just thinking about what you just said. So Iowa thought the best way to stop Michigan was to go under screens against a point guard who shoots 59% from three in Big Ten games.
Right.
Right. Like that's what you're coming up with to try to stop Michigan. Now we can say whatever we want about Iowa's game plan, but Indiana did the same thing. Indiana was going under screens and then Mike hit a couple threes and you have to do something different. Like
one he hit in the first half was huge.
And I honestly think that might be the best game plan because like, the other option is let pros beat you and right. Like let the Ivy League see, maybe he'll miss, right? Like that, right. As far as your options, I don't know that there, I think if you can funnel him into, especially kind of those middle twos, which he can make at a pretty good rate, but I think the best plan to beat Michigan is, okay, Mike Smith, can you score 18 points against us if sure. We give you 10 shots? That's what I would do if I was trying to game plan against Michigan. He's also proven he can make those shots though, so it's tough. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and watch the Minnesota game, that's what they did to a large degree. Mm-hmm. He shot the ball a lot, couldn't really get to the rim, so that game plan makes sense. But man, he's shooting 48% from three on the year, 59% in Big Ten games. He can make shots, right? So I think it's definitely a funny dynamic. But it's kind of speaks to everything else we were talking about. Like, this is what Michigan is, and that's your best plan. It's just sounds a little crazy when you take a step back.
No doubt. My favorite stat from that story is, to put in perspective how much he shot at Columbia, he took 580 field goal attempts last year. Franz Wagner, Isaiah Livers, and Hunter Dickinson combined this year through whatever it is, 19 games, have taken 547 shots. So still well below what Mike did by himself last year.
Does he know you were dragging him all summer about how he's going to never want to pass?
I doubt
Harsh,
that
man.
I did have him on the podcast with Nick and asked him all of the questions that I
know. I listened to that. It was a good listen. Jordan Sperber did a good video on Michigan, which I highly recommend you check out.
Perfect.
And he had some stats that I've been noticing but haven't really used recently. But Mike Smith is basically passing on 2/3 of ball screens mm-hmm. at Michigan. And then at Columbia, he shot on 2/3 of ball screens, essentially. So it's basically a flip. And basically, you shouldn't be able, I would say, to pass on 2/3. Like, if 2/3 of your ball screen possessions are passes, that means you have really good players around you. Like, So I think that's great. And he's embraced that role and he's really good in that role. But just his ability, like, all he needs to do is take a few dribbles and then find the guy lifting from the corner, and you have a pro who's just going to make a play in that spot, right? Like, it makes him look like a really good passer when, in fact, the guys around him, and that's what he said to his credit all summer when he would talk about it. He's like, man, you see these guys I'm passing the ball to. It's nice. So there's no one in the Ivy League who could catch the ball, get downhill, and then finish with a hook shot from 8 feet away like Franz Wagner can. So that's what really makes this team special. And it's how the ball moves so effectively in Michigan's offense.
And one of the big progressions, Mike brought this up when we were talking, one of the biggest differences over the course of this year has been his understanding and recognition of how the defense moves around what Michigan's doing, and kind of getting other guys, you know, how other players are going to start reacting, right? And just the anticipation of what's going to come next, right? That, like, it takes time. You're not just going to do that in the first couple of weeks. But, like, now at this point, like, the reads that he's making and just understanding what defenses are going to do is getting to that, you know, that level where he's just carving some teams.
Mm-hmm. We got breaking news on the pod.
Uh-oh.
Teddy Buckets, he's out. Leaving the Nebraska program.
Pro or portal?
Just Borzello tweeted, Nebraska guard Teddy Allen is leaving the program per the school. Man, Nebraska ball, huh? That's a hell of a thing.
How many new players will Nebraska have on its roster next year? First year player.
There's always like 9.5. They'll have the McGowans will be back because his brother's coming, right? So that's going to be the team. But
or they'll go somewhere else.
I mean, I just don't understand. He's got a big dub. Did he not play? Was he suspended for this game? He only played 10 minutes. Teddy Buckets plays 10 minutes. Teddy Buckets backs up his bags.
There we go. Greener pastures, baby. Well, all right. I'm coming up on a call, so we're going to have to cut this thing right here, I think. But we will be back right Wednesday. Rivalry.
Yeah, we got to do a free Michigan State, Michigan pod for sure.
Yeah. So a couple games Tuesday night. We'll see what happens. Michigan, Illinois, Michigan State, Indiana. We will be back Wednesday morning, bright and early. Try to knock that thing out and get it up for you folks as early as possible for all of your rivalry game needs. Make sure you are subscribed to UM Hoops. Make sure you are subscribed to The Athletic. Tell your friends to listen to this podcast, especially this week and this month, and tip your bartenders and your servers.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.